Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. Today, happy to be joined by John Corrales, host of Locked On Celtics with Rain and Jays. John, what's going on, man?
Chilling, man. Getting ready for game two. Hoping it goes a little bit better than game one.
Yeah, so let's start right there. Game one was not competitive for most of that game. I don't know if you'd agree with this. I think the score indicates a closer game than we got for most of it. I thought Boston was certainly a lot better in the second half, especially when they were just making the open shots that Cleveland defense is giving them. What did you take away from game one?
Well, I think the poor shooting from the Celtics is a big problem. I said going into this series that, I mean, we know what we're facing, and for the Celtics to be competitive, I think they just need to shoot better than they've been shooting, better than their average. So they shot well below their average. And so that's an initial recipe for disaster. When the Celtics shot at 1.1 of 15, I think they're 2 of 16 in the first half, that is less than ideal, because I do think that the Celtics are going to have opportunities to score. I think the Cavaliers will give them chances to take those threes, chances to get decent looks, but if they're not falling, then nothing else is going to work. That's where it all starts. So when I saw the Celtics just come out missing a lot of good looks early, then I knew it wasn't going to go well, because then there's nothing else. Everything comes off of that. Because if you're shooting well, then Isaiah can start getting into the lane, because your defenders have to start sticking a little bit closer to the three-point shooters. And I know Jay Crowder can shoot better than he has been shooting. And I know that the Cavaliers are willing to let him shoot. He's going to make them pay. The 4 of 6 that he shot in that game was not really indicative of the game that he had. I think he hit a few in the third quarter. That's going to be what he is for the whole game. And he's going to do that early. He's going to hit those threes in the first quarter, because that's going to force guys to react to him. So that if I'm looking at one thing, one of many things, that's where I start.
I don't know. I'm probably gonna butcher this stat, but I think the Cavs and the Celtics came in some order 1 and 2 in threes made per game in the playoffs. They were 1 and 2 or 1 and 3. I'm not sure. Someone can fact check me on that and tweet me and let me know. But that is very telling to me that you have two teams that are coming in that are going to shoot a lot of threes, that are going to be so reliant on the three ball, and neither really shot the three ball well. If you look at the Cavs, functionally, their three most important shooters, or the three best shooters, J.R. Smith, Kyrie Irving, and Kyle Korver combined to go 1 of 10 in game 1 from 3. J.R. Smith took 1 3. Kyle Korver missed 5 threes. That seems unlikely to happen again. At the same time, you know, Avery Bradley's been phenomenal in the playoffs. I wouldn't expect him to miss these open looks that he's getting. You know, you think Isaiah's going to have just a function better game, because he's Isaiah freaking Thomas. The guy is amazing. He's been unbelievable all year. I kind of think it kind of feels like game two. If Boston comes in, maybe they're acclimated now. Maybe you know, they got that first game out of the way after coming off a very emotional up and down Wizards series. Maybe they come on in game two and they're more comfortable. They're sort of settled in the series, especially because you saw the comments. I don't think they feel. We've seen the Cavs and LeBron specifically break teams. We have seen him kind of demoralize teams. I think we saw it against Toronto, where Dwayne Casey was just talking about not getting swept for the sake of pride. Like, they sort of felt that it was over and it ended up being over. I don't think Boston feels that way, and I think that's a big advantage when you're playing a team like the Cavs.
Yeah, no, they definitely don't feel that way. And there is something to be said about that. They've played, let's see, the Cavaliers have played 8 games going into this series. The Celtics have played 13. And while the Cavaliers rested, the Celtics were playing against the Wizards, who are a really good team, but they're not the Cavs. And when you play a certain team over and over and over again in a 7-game series, and then a game, you know, 2 days later, you're still kind of working at that other team's speed. And the Cavaliers just play at a different pace, a different speed, at a different level. And I think early on, I saw the Celtics just overreacting a lot to things the Cavaliers were doing. They weren't closing out with any discipline. They weren't rotating with any real discipline. It was just kind of like, oh, shit, he's over here. I got to go here. And a couple of guys would go there, and it was just a little frantic. And then in the second half, Marcus Smart started, you know, hitting people.
I loved that, to be honest with you. Like, I enjoyed Marcus Smart just, like, annoying the crap out of Tristan Thompson. It resulted in one of the best moments, the funny moments of the game, where, like, Isaiah was talking ish to Kyrie, and Kyrie just pointed at the scoreboard. He just, like, walks up and, like, points and goes, and Isaiah's just, like kind of had this, like, look of, like, yeah, like, no shit, Kyrie. Like, you guys are up by, like, 20 points. Like, we get it. But
That's why we're doing this.
Right, exactly. And, like, I love that Marcus Smart was annoying Tristan. Like, I had Cavs fans, like, that I you know, interact with and am friends with that were, like, annoyed by Marcus Smart. I love that. Like, I love that they're not going to be intimidated by the Cavs, that they have guys like Marcus Smart, you know, like Isaiah, that are just so ultra competitive, and a guy in Jaylen Brown, a rookie who's not fazed by this, right? Like, every time I've watched him play, I just come away, like, so impressed, like, with how poised he is. You know, I think his dribbling certainly needs some work, but I think he certainly looks more comfortable than he did 6 months ago, and he just looks like a guy who can play in the series, and that's awesome. Like, that is an awesome thing that you have that, and at least you're getting something. Like, even if this goes 5 games, like, you're getting Jaylen Brown getting reps against the Cavs. Like, that in itself is kind of like an amazing thing.
Like, of course. Now, let me just for the Cavs fans out there who may not, I know we've done pot crossovers before, but let me set my expectations. This is coming in.
Yeah,
this series is gravy to me. I know exactly where the Celtics are, that this is still part of the rebuilding process. Now, you might say, well, you're the top seed. Yeah, we are. And it's a nice kind of thing to brag about in a, hey, look, we've been rebuilding for 3 years and we went from, you know, shouldn't have made the playoffs a couple of seasons ago, get swept by the Cavaliers, to Eastern Conference Finals and maybe also getting swept by the Cavaliers. But still, it's still only the third year of the rebuilding process, really. So that's like a little bragging right. So we're the top seed, but not really the top seed. Toronto was probably better if they had stayed healthy all season. The Cavaliers, LeBron kind of coasted for a long part. He played a lot of minutes, but I don't think he was really going hard for all of those minutes that he was playing. And in the end, the Cavaliers kind of frittered away whatever chances they had, and they just said, ah, screw it. We don't need the top seed, which is an entirely different discussion, but whatever. So I know the Celtics kind of slipped into that top seed. So that's fine. People can say what they want about it. I get that. If everything was healthy, if everybody was healthy, if everything was normal, Celtics probably would be a third seed instead of the first seed. Yeah. And this is playing out like a one seed, which is what the Cavs probably should have been, versus a 3 seed, you know, a team that you can sit there and say, well, if they do this, this, and this, they'll make it a good series, but really they won't win. So for the Celtics coming into the season, I thought low 50 wins, which was good. They got that. Get out of the first round. You have a competitive second round series. They got both of those, and they happen to win that competitive second round series. And now they've gone to the Eastern Conference Finals, which is essentially the absolute ceiling for this team, the way it was created. And now we're here. And I know the guys playing don't think this, but I'm like, cool, this is all gravy. So getting back to the point, circling back to the Jaylen Brown thing, That's why I love the Jaylen Brown thing. That's why 20 minutes isn't enough for Jaylen Brown. And I don't know if he's going to get more than 20 minutes, but get him out there. Let him learn. Let him face LeBron. Let him foul out against LeBron if he has to. I want him to have at least four games of that image of LeBron toying with him, LeBron backing him down, LeBron crossing him over, using those little tricks. And then I want him to take every second of that game footage into the summer and study it and learn from it. This is like his master's class right now. This is it. So I'm appreciative of this moment. I love the fact that he's got this moment. And if it's something that will give Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford, especially Isaiah Thomas, though, because he gets motivation from everything. If this is something that pisses him off and gets him motivated to come back next season, just another thing to add to the pile of motivation, perfect. Perfect. Because the Celtics go into this summer with the number one overall pick, max cap space, and assets to trade. And if things go well, then next year is the year where we start looking at the Celtics as true contenders, as opposed to guys who are overachieving and in this position and kind of like, "Ooh, boy, this is all kind of fun, and I don't really care." So I'm happy with this.
Would you start Jaylen Brown in game two?
Maybe.
Can I tell you why I would? Because I have a theory about this that I could. Okay, so
I heard you guys talking about this on the podcast yesterday, but refresh my memory.
Okay, so I'm actually writing about this too because I for not through the sword but for the setback. This is my thing. I don't know if like Amir Johnson in that first 5 minutes was just, if he's not rebounding, what's the point? You know, like if he's not, like, they're gonna do work against Tristan, what is the point? Horford's probably gonna struggle against Tristan, and the Jaylen move certainly would put more pressure on him to rebound against Thompson, which didn't go well in game one, especially early. I think if you get Brown out there, even if it's going to cause some problems on the boards, I think offensively it's going to make them more fluid. I think it would make Boston more fluid. You can get him or Jay Crowder in these situations where Kevin Love is going to have to chase him out to the perimeter. And like, that's Jay Crowder, you know, isn't the super dynamo off the dribble, and Brown isn't there yet. Someone to me said his dribbling's like a young Tristan, and I think like that's kind of crazy because I think he certainly has some ball skills. I think you have a guy who can create some of these mismatches against Kevin Love that the Warriors, to his utmost degree, do better than anybody because they're the Golden State Warriors. But you have a guy in Jaylen Brown that allows you to go small, that Jay Crowder can solo defend LeBron. You can have these two guys on the floor that can switch with LeBron and at least stay in front of him to a degree. The two guys who relish going at LeBron. And I just don't know if like starting Kelly Olynyk is going to help you. Brad Stevens did this thing in game one where he kept having Kelly Olynyk step out one-on-one against LeBron, and they didn't trap or they didn't double or didn't do anything besides switch and then leave this guy out there. If you're going to do that, I'd rather just have Jaylen Brown do it. Have Jay Crowder be in the position to do that, and you're going to lose some rebounding. You certainly, you know, just lose some sheer size against a Cavs front court that really did a lot of damage in game one. But I don't know. I kind of just want to. I think that's kind of the most fun tweak Boston can do, and it's kind of the most out there tweak, because starting Kelly Olynyk or giving Jonas Jerebko minutes or sticking with Amir Johnson don't really seem like things that are going to work. And maybe the Jaylen thing doesn't work, but you have the upside that he gets to learn, and it's something that Cleveland would have to adjust to in a way that at least is like a more meaningful adjustment than putting in Olynyk as opposed to Amir Johnson.
I can buy that argument. I definitely know the Celtics they're gonna have to adjust something, because Amir Johnson is. I feel like this has been the third straight series where we've been saying you can't start Amir Johnson. Yeah, he keeps going back to it. I get what he was going for in the Wizards series, and it kind of worked at the tail end of the Wizards series. They needed somebody to protect the rim from the John Wall drives, and he did that to a degree. He played less than 20 minutes in each game. But he did enough, so that's fine. In this series, I don't think we need Amir Johnson. I like your rationale. I think if you started Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Jaylen Brown, Crowder, and Horford, then you put Bradley on Kyrie, mm-hmm. You put Isaiah on J.R. Smith, Jaylen Brown on LeBron.
Yep.
You have Crowder on Thompson and Horford on Kevin Love. Now, or you put Horford on Thompson and Crowder on Kevin Love, and you try to take Kevin Love completely out of the offense with Crowder's defense, and you just let Jaylen try to guard LeBron. I just said I wanted him to have a learning experience. That's certainly a way to do it.
I mean, that's if you're talking about a master's class, that's like taking the PhD, you know, like in the second week of your grad program. Like that's what that is. LeBron's, this is a like arrested versa climber enthused LeBron James. Like this is a guy that's in a good physical place besides all the minutes that he's played. You know, like he's fresh. There are certainly flaws to it, right? Like I think it puts a lot of pressure on Horford to rebound, and Thompson was like, he didn't ultimately make this impact every quarter, but he was just insane on the offensive glass in the first quarter. It puts more pressure on Avery Bradley to probably lock up Kyrie one-on-one, which I think he's certainly capable of doing because we've seen him do it before. I think back to that March game where him and Kyrie were like just – and you came up with this analogy, and I've stolen this like a bajillion times since then. They battle in that phone booth. They battle and just go at each other, and that benefits the Celtics. When Kyrie isn't looking to create for others – it limits what the Cavs are going to be, and Kyrie has been the guy who's creating for others while also trying to score so far in the playoffs. And when he's not doing that, the Cavs certainly suffer a little bit. And I don't know what they do. I don't know like if you start Olynyk, but I mean, would Olynyk be the guy? Like, what would you do if you're Brad Stevens? What do you do to tweak?
Here's what I think. I think we're kind of looking at things maybe a little bit the wrong way, because we're trying to figure out how the Celtics are going to guard the Cavaliers. And I'm not sure that's the way to think about it. I think Brad Stevens might try to force Lou to match up with Boston. I think the way to do this, and I know you guys kind of hinted at this in your podcast, and we kind of got into this in our podcast last night too. The answer might be to just run.
Yeah, and I like that.
The best defense is getting LeBron tired. And really, let's look at, you pick your poison with LeBron. And the poison that I choose, it's like Princess Bride with me trying to choose which goblet has the Iocane powder. I'm going to try to really outthink myself here. The poison that I choose is LeBron James the jump shooter, which is the poison that everybody chooses. Mm-hmm. So how do you turn LeBron James into a jump shooter? Well, maybe you can get a guy who's fleet of foot enough to stay in front of LeBron long enough to frustrate him into just taking jump shots. That's kind of not the greatest. What you do, if Tyronn Lue insists on playing LeBron 42 minutes, you just run, and you force him to play defense. You force him to go for those chase down blocks. You force him to go out there and play in transition. And when you look at the way the Cavaliers guard the Celtics, the best thing you can do is force them into cross matches in transition where you can pick out a mismatch somewhere and you don't have to worry about Isaiah Thomas getting to the rim against a set Cleveland defense. You have Isaiah Thomas getting to the rim on a drag screen in transition where there's not enough time, and maybe Tristan Thompson has picked up Avery Bradley somewhere, and there's a cross match that you can take advantage of. So I think this, the other starter that Brad Stevens has gone to in situations like this is Gerald Green. And Gerald Green came out in garbage time, obviously, but hit a few shots. He might just say, forget the defense, forget the rebounding. If we can get out there, run off of a make, run off of a miss, run off of a turnover, every opportunity you can get, do not walk the ball up the floor. And just if you have to pull Isaiah out and put in, you have Terry Rozier, you have Marcus Smart, you have Gerald Green, there's no point in shortening your rotation if you're the Celtics. Throw everybody out there. you're not trying to, this isn't a typical series. You're not sitting there saying, ah, we got to shorten our rotation to seven or eight guys because that's, those are our best seven, eight guys. Screw it. Throw them all out there. James Young, throw him out there for 2 minutes. If it means getting somebody a rest and cycle them back in almost like hockey lines and try to put up over 100 field goal attempts. This way, if you're still only shooting 40%, well, now you've at least gotten so many shots up and probably drawn enough fouls where you have still scored a lot of points. So I think if the Celtics are going to have a chance, I think it's to outscore the Cavaliers. And I know they can get shots. The one thing I was very confident coming into this series was the Celtics can score. And I think they just got to really ramp that effort up and just score as many points as possible and hope that LeBron tires out and that he's taking jumpers in the fourth quarter. Maybe you can steal a couple of games.
Yeah, I like that idea because we haven't seen the Cavs, who had a very bad transition defense in the regular season, partially due to player personnel, partially due to just general apathy for the regular season and just general bad effort levels. They have not been tested in transition at all in the playoffs in like a meaningful way. Like I think in the Indiana series, some of Paul George's best moments, particularly, I remember this vividly in game one, were when the Pacers created a turnover and George just got free in the chaos of going up the other end of the floor and the Cavs didn't mark him. I think with scheme, they're going to be better. I think one of the things that that makes me think they have a chance. I would pick Golden State. Like, I'm going to be honest. Like, if and when that happens, I would pick Golden State. But one of the things that I think can maybe makes me think the Cavs can at least make it go a little bit longer than four games is just the fact that they do very well when they're rested and when they can scheme. I think they'll be prepared for some sort of transition. But Isaiah is incredible, right? Like, Isaiah is this guy who is so fast. He's going to find shooters. I thought he did a really nice job finding guys. Like, he maybe didn't score a ton in game one, but I think he had 10 assists, if I'm not mistaken. Had an overall pretty solid game, even if he's not scoring boatloads of points. And if you do that and you tire out LeBron, you make Kevin Love have to run up the floor, you make Kyrie Irving have to make defensive decisions in space, that's a recipe for success against the Cavs' defense. The question then becomes, can you keep up with the Cavs' offense if you're going to play that game? Like, and I think that gets back to kind of goes full circle for us here. Which team is going to hit threes in this game? If both teams are hitting threes, this could be really close and it could be a fun game, or it could be the game one where neither team is really effective from three. But what if Boston in this game is just torching the Cavs from three and it's in transition and they find this recipe for success? Is maybe that's their best path to victory, is just hitting a lot of threes and making the Cavs work by running up and down the floor, you know, and playing a bit smaller and utilizing the strengths of Isaiah, the strengths of some of their other guards.
I think that ultimately what might happen. So that might, if we're going to look down that road, then I'm going to guess that Brad Stevens goes maybe Gerald Green as the starter again, because he's gone to him before and I think he trusts him in that lineup. Doesn't mean that Jaylen Brown isn't a good choice. Excuse me. He's a good young athletic player that sure as hell can flourish in transition. So I think either way, I mean, I would not be surprised either way. Green is a more polished 3-point shooter. So it may be a situation where Brad Stevens is going to go with the shooting over the athleticism. I wouldn't be surprised with that, but Jaylen Brown is going to certainly get his minutes and certainly has shown a better 3-point touch than expected this season. And like I said, you get him out and running, he's a gazelle and he can jump over people. So that's going to probably be the way to go. And look, if the Celtics lose 130 to 125, then at the very least you've lost a pretty damn entertaining game. You know, I would rather see that than watch the Celtics try to execute in the half court against the Cavaliers, because they can't. They really can't. And I know Kyrie is a defensive liability and Love is a defensive liability, but in the half court, you can scheme and switch and do these things and still have Thompson kind of patrolling the rim, where that hurts and you can't really – Isaiah Thomas has some trouble. So the other thing I mentioned in our podcast is that I think Isaiah needs to dip into his bag of tricks when when they do get into the half court. Earlier in the season, he had a few little moves where – He had a floater that he would take once he got into the lane. I think he needs to unleash that a little bit and kind of at least force Thompson when he's in there or whomever is protecting the rim to at least think like, oh, he could take that floater. And then once he gets that into Thompson's head, then Isaiah's great at up faking, kind of like giving a little head juke and getting a guy just off balance, not even up faking and having him jump, just off balance where his equilibrium is kind of going in one direction and it's just enough for Isaiah to get to the other direction. The other thing he did earlier in the season is he would jump off the wrong foot and take his layup. So instead of, you know, left, right, jump off the right foot, left-handed layup, he'd be driving left, jump right off of that left foot, not even take that step, and throw off the timing of the defender. So if you're expecting him to take that extra step, Thompson would still be in his gather, ready to block the shot. But if Isaiah's already in the air, then Thompson's just that half second late. And Isaiah is just crafty around the rim that he can get shots up at weird angles, at crazy heights, get it up off the glass and score. So I think Isaiah needs to dip into those kind of tricks in those situations to score in the half court situation.
I think that's completely accurate. I tweeted about this like instantly because of the first play of the game when Isaiah, I think it was an Isaiah Horford pick and roll. I could be wrong on who the screener was, but Tristan or it might have been Amir Johnson, I don't know. But you had Kyrie and Love push Isaiah into the corner like really well, and I was like, oh, like this is like not great. And I think that what you hit on for the Celtics is like, yeah, like the Isaiah is certainly capable of exploiting those guys, and he's gonna get his openings, and he's gonna have, I think Isaiah's probably gonna have a game where he drops 40 points, right? Like just what we've seen from him this year and what he did against the Wizards, unless he's just out of gas, which doesn't really seem to be the case. Like, I can't imagine he's not going to have a game like that. You know, he's been too good this year for that not to happen. The other side of this is, I think you maybe have to adjust where he's playing, and I'm not the first person to think this. Like, I got kind of stealing this from Matt Moore. Kyrie's going to attack him. And, like, I can't imagine, like, I've been saying this for, like, three games now, but I can't imagine Kyrie's going to play that bad again. You know, like, he's had a couple of kind of iffy games. He had a really good fourth quarter in the last game of the Raptors series. Isaiah, from the get-go, is kind of clear that he's going to struggle there. So, and you can't avoid it, you know, altogether. And you certainly can use Avery Bradley and move Isaiah often. But if the Cavs get him one-on-one against Isaiah, that's a problem. And I think you could probably hide Isaiah better when the Cavs have that, go to that bench unit where Deron Williams and Iman Shumpert. And at the same time, if they do what they did in game one, where Kevin Love is that bench unit pillar and not LeBron James to start the second quarter, that's an opportunity for Boston, I think, because that lineup did okay in game one. It was +5 early, and then it kind of fizzled a little bit. That's an area where I think Boston could do some damage against the Cavs, especially if it's a rough first quarter again and the need to make some ground up fast. If the Cavs go to that Love plus bench instead of LeBron plus bench, you get Isaiah in there, you get him, make it easier to hide him on defense, and you make your run there. I think that's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, and so we've been talking about this. I will say that having listened to your podcast and having done mine, it's really interesting. We both really saw this game pretty much the same way.
Yeah,
which is kind of weird.
Yeah, because I listened to yours and I was like, oh, like I checked this box of mine and I checked this. Like it was very much sort of the same thing, which is very rare. Which is very rare.
Yeah, it really is, because usually when two different fan bases are looking at a game from their own perspective, you tend to see things so differently. But I really do think that we've seen a lot of the same things. So, I mean, I would think that Brad Stevens could decide that you play, if we're going to go with the up-tempo thing, let's say they go with the up-tempo thing, well, then now you can pull Isaiah Thomas out at like the 6-minute mark and put him back in at like 10 or 11, have them play the last minute and a half, then you get the quarter break and you get them back out there to start the second quarter against the Cavs bench unit. You maybe throw him and Horford out there, stagger your lineups a little bit. You can still put Marcus Smart in there for the last half of the first quarter. He's still a capable point guard. I've always touted his playmaking ability throughout the series. Now, obviously, he's not that great of a shooter, but he's actually not bad from the corners. So if he can take the right kinds of shots, he's okay. But defensively, you keep him and Avery Bradley out there. I think you what you do is Avery Bradley is the guy that maybe plays the whole majority of the first quarter or maybe the entire first quarter. And then you have the two defensive stalwarts out there and you go small and you spend the second half of the first quarter just super small and running with those guys and defending the hell out of Kyrie and, you know, whoever else is on the floor with him, trying to force some turnovers, just really get in there, just get in their jocks, and then try to stagger it so you've got your two best offensive options against a Cavs bench unit. And again, force Tyronn Lue to adjust to you. And once you get those guys adjusting to you, that you tend to have at least a tiny bit of an advantage, or you've at least accomplished something.
Yeah. If they go to Joe Green starting, how do you match up defensively there?
Well, if you go with Gerald Green, I would put it'd be Isaiah on – I would still say Isaiah on Isaiah on Smith, Avery on Kyrie. You put, I think, Green on Kevin Love. And one of these guys is going to try to post up. Maybe you put Green on Thompson. And what you do is you try to bog the Cavaliers' offense down into Thompson post-ups, which is the most palatable option that I would have.
Yeah.
And then you just have Horford on Love and Crowder on LeBron. And if they sit there and they say, oh, we got Tristan Thompson on a post-up against Gerald Green, okay, that's fine. You know, it's not great. And he might just be able to back a guy down, but who knows? Maybe one of the wing guys can dig down and force, instead of letting Thompson just dribble, back him down. One of the perimeter guys just digs down, don't double, just dig down and make his dribble uncomfortable, force him to pick it up, force him to take a shot, and box out, especially. And then get running that way. I think that's the way I would go. And I would try to goad Cleveland into posting up Tristan Thompson because that's your least efficient offensive option, and it would slow everything down for you guys. Take the ball out of LeBron's hands for sure, and then hopefully you get a miss or a turnover, and you can get out running.
Yeah, I hope that's what happens. I hope we get something sort of more interesting, kind of more fascinating, because I want to see the Cavs push. Like, I want to see them put in uncomfortable situations. I haven't seen it really yet besides for glimpses, and I think Boston has the tools to do it. We'll wrap it up on this. We don't need to do game predictions or anything like that, because those are fools gold in so many ways. What is just one other thing that maybe we haven't talked about, or just what is your general expectation for game two?
I think the Celtics are going to come out pissed off. I think it's going to be a little bit different. I would expect them to make more of these shots. I think they just kind of are much more aware of what's facing them, as opposed, like I said earlier, they were used to playing the Wizards for seven games. They've kind of gotten past that. They had a day off. They kind of understand now what they're facing. So I would expect like a grittier, like Marcus Smart, I think, is going to be all up in people's faces. He's going to be a pain in the ass. If you don't hate Marcus Smart already, Cavs fans, you're gonna like soon. Marcus Smart. He's going to be a severe pain in your ass, and he's going to be like the emotional leader. And I would expect the bench to come out and play a little bit better. One of those guys is going to have a weird game. Like, Terry Rozier has the potential to have like a weirdly awesome game in game two, just because he's going to be the guy that you forget about, and he's going to hit like three threes and force a timeout in the third quarter. And people will be like, what the hell is Terry Rozier doing banging three straight threes on us?
Shaker
like
that, his own Terry Rozier.
Yeah. Like that's the weird stuff that's going to happen. But I would just expect the Celtics to just pick up the pace and put the pressure on the Cavaliers like that. Brad Stevens is a smart guy, And he knows when you look at that Cavs team, facing them in the half court is not a good idea. Half court games against the Cavaliers, you're just going to get crushed. So get out and run. Get out and run. And I'm sure that's going to be the message. And so I would expect a lot of shots. A lot of shots, almost like a D'Antoni 7 seconds or less type of game.
I hope that's what we see. I hope we see both teams shoot well from three. And I kind of hope we get the Kyrie-Isaiah duel.
Like that's, I mean, don't you want this?
I do. I do want this to go like more than four. Like I would,
of course.
Like,
of course.
I would rather see that.
Right. What we want really is we want a Rocky movie where each guy is throwing like those ridiculous boxing sequences where nobody plays any, no one's defending anything. It's just Rocky throwing 10 straight haymakers and then Apollo following up with 10 straight haymakers of his own. And then at the end, both guys are just dead and it's whoever gets up before the 10 count first. Like that's the type of game we want to see. And if the Celtics end up getting swept, losing, like I said, 130 to 125, so be it. It's the Cavaliers. They're just at a different level. And we understand that the Celtics aren't quite ready to be at that level. Next year's a different story, but right now, no. So if that's what we get, I'll be happy. I just want people to, at the end of the games, to be like standing and applauding, like, yes, thank you for that. Just crazy, crazy points. Like it was like 1965.
I'm here for that as well, and I hope it comes back to Cleveland with some juice, with some fire between the teams, because that'd
be fun.
That'd be a fun environment. And then this is two teams. There is a history with LeBron and the Celtics. There's some bad blood between these guys that dates back to the 2014-15 season, and that could, I think, get brought up in an instant. We already have J.R. Smith saying he's expecting some dirty play in game two. So we'll see how this goes. John, it's always a pleasure, my man, and we'll have to do this again soon.
You got it, man.